Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. Let's talk about the global conspiracy against the American president that Trump himself is always talking about. As it becomes ever more obvious that Trump's conspiracy theories drive much of his foreign relations, we thought it timely to connect the dots of his worldview. So let's begin at the beginning with a low-level foreign policy advisor in the Trump campaign named George Papadopoulos.
We might remember that the entire reason the FBI launched a counterintelligence investigation of the Trump campaign was because Papadopoulos drunkenly told the Australian ambassador to the UK that he had learned that the Russians had dirt on Hillary Clinton.
Vox staff writer Alex Ward will guide us through this dark terrain. He pays the theory's origins to April 2016, when Papadopoulos gets a tip from a Maltese professor named Joseph Mifsud about Russia's nasty intelligence on Hillary Clinton. The next turn comes a few months later when a drunken Papadopoulos tells an Australian diplomat about the tip. That diplomat tells Australian authorities, who pass the information to the FBI, which opens an investigation into Trump's campaign. From connecting such dots, the shape of a great fake conspiracy emerges. Team Trump claims that Mifsud was in fact a Western agent sent to mess with the Trump campaign. So says the president's lawyer and emissary, Rudy Giuliani.
Mifsud, the diplomat from Malta who has a counterintelligence background, who planted this information.
Thus, conspiracy theory number one. Mifsud is an Italian or at least Western agent whose mission was to send the Trump team off on a wild goose chase. And that's why the attorney general went to Italy last week to prove it.
Bill Barr went to Italy last week to meet with senior intelligence officials there as part of the Justice Department's investigation into the origins of the Russia probe.
But there will be no proof, because the Mueller investigation found that Mifsud had Russian ties, but no relevant Western ones. The Trump team, unbowed, thus conjured up more conspirators. They claim the Australian diplomat was also a spy, waiting for Papadopoulos to mention the Russian-based Hillary dirt, to pass it on to the feds to make the Trump campaign look bad.
Trump does not like that it is known that the Russians interfered in the 2016 election and did so in order to help him win, or at least that the Russians favored him. And so this is a great counter-narrative. We were being spied on, that all of this was a conspiracy against Trump and that none of the investigation was legitimate from the beginning.
Or no, it's the British who spied, a theory Trump announced on Twitter in April.
A former CIA analyst on the conservative One America News Network accusing British intelligence of helping the Obama administration spy, adding, "Wow, it is now just a question of time before the truth comes out, and when it does, it will be a beauty."
Debunked long ago. But the Trump team fingers yet a different foreign election meddler. No matter that Mueller gathered enough evidence to charge a Russian troll farm, 12 Russian intel agents, and 13 Russian nationals, according to Trump, Ukraine did it to help the Democrats. How does he know? Because the Democrats hired the cybersecurity company CrowdStrike to investigate Russian government hackers who leaked Democratic emails to disrupt Clinton's campaign. And CrowdStrike is Ukrainian. Except it isn't. It's based in California. It's not Ukrainian at all. But that's one of those inconvenient truths Trump just shakes off.
We know from former Trump senior officials that actually they tried to dispel Trump of that notion repeatedly. We heard from the former top Homeland Security advisor Tom Bossert.
It's not only a conspiracy theory, it is completely debunked. It sticks in his mind when he hears it over and over again. Let me just repeat that it has no validity.
Nor does Trump's assertion that CrowdStrike harbors Clinton's email servers. All those delicious top-secret emails.
Where are those servers? They're missing. Where are they? What happened to Hillary Clinton's emails? 33,000 emails gone.
The problem for Trump here is that there actually is no missing physical server associated with the DNC breach. So how this got into Trump's head, why he feels that Ukraine would have a physical server anyway, all of this is very unclear.
four conspiracies all pointing to one reason Team Trump is calling, visiting, and smearing Italy, Australia, the UK, and Ukraine. Four conspiracies, but when you boil it down, just a single theory.
That the president was persecuted, that the president's team was not at fault, and it was in fact a conspiracy by political enemies to tear down a campaign and then a presidency. And so if you're looking at the core, we have a president who is just unwilling to believe the facts as they are known and instead twist reality in order to attack political opponents.
Writing in The Nation this week, national affairs correspondent Jeet Heer argues that the president believes, at least in the outlines of the conspiracy theory just described. Jeet harkens back to a famous line from the 1983 movie Scarface, advice to an aspiring drug lord.
Lesson number two, don't get high on your own supply.
That's right. Lesson number two, don't get high on your own supply.
There's a very long academic tradition going back to the great Richard Hofstadter, who's one of the major 20th century American historians. He famously wrote about the paranoid style in American politics. And what he said was that the paranoid style comes from the fringes, from the far left and the far right.
But as he notes, Hofstadter's view has been challenged on the idea that conspiracy theories are the products only of people on the margins of power.
If you actually look at the sort of history of American paranoia and conspiracy theories, you often find that they're very elite figures who believe in them. I mean, things like the Red Scare were led by J. Edgar Hoover and Joseph McCarthy. And if you think about it, it kind of makes sense. Like if you have, you know, sort of powerful people high above society, it's very easy for them to try to blame any problems on outsider groups. And that has been the tradition, just as much as there's also been a tradition of populist groups using conspiracy theories.
So as you pondered the possibility that Donald Trump actually may have fallen into the same trap as Scarface and become intoxicated, you concluded that, in fact, he has.
Yes, I should actually qualify that a little bit by saying that with Donald Trump, the question of belief, I don't think applies in the same way that it does to other people. His view of truth is very instrumental. You know, the philosopher Harry Frankfurter made a famous distinction between lying and BS.
Mm-hmm.
The liar knows that they're lying, whereas the BSer doesn't care about the difference between truth and lying. So Trump, I think it's very clear from the last 50 years of his life that he doesn't really care about the distinction between truth and lies. And that makes it all the easier for him to grab onto these emotional narratives that support what he actually feels, which is persecuted. You know, whether something is actually factually true is not at all a concern. The question is it useful for him? And then if it is, he takes it up and it becomes part of him. The circle around him, though, definitely includes people who like seem to be really gung-ho about this and not in a manipulative way.
Let's talk about Trump's inner circle then, especially Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Attorney General William Barr.
Sure. The Daily Beast had some good reporting that, like last week, the Attorney General of the United States took it upon himself to go to Italy with associates to try to find these audio tapes of this professor from Malta to see if he was involved in a deep state conspiracy to entrap one of Trump's henchmen. I mean, the fact that Barr is doing this, that he's going to Italy as an American public official, getting Italian intelligence and Italian law enforcement involved in this. I mean, these people are acting as if these conspiracy theories have some basis in fact and that they're carrying out an investigation.
You quote Julian Sanchez of the Cato Institute's tweet. He wrote, "I don't want to jump to conclusions, but a lot of weird aspects of this seem consistent with Barr having gone full tinfoil hat, as in the AG personally globetrotting to play Nancy Drew would make more sense if he decided his own subordinates are deep state agents."
Sanchez is exactly right. This seems to spring from a distrust that Trump and his inner circle have of these permanent government bureaucracy, which has resisted many of Trump's illegal requests. And Trump interprets that as their deep state. Like if Trump says, let's build a moat at the border filled with alligators and shoot migrants that are coming in, people don't carry that out. For Trump's brain, that seems to suggest treason. And unfortunately, people like Barr seem to go along with this mindset.
Mm-hmm.
There's very much a kind of bubble created by Fox News. And if you look at Barr's writing before he became attorney general, where he's supporting Trump, he gave a lot of credence to a lot of the sort of Fox News view that Trump is a president that's being persecuted.
Well, you see, and that's really interesting because it almost brings us back to Hofstadter in a way. I mean, if we think of conspiracy theories as being the tool of those who are marginalized, oppressed, as usually being a tool of the weak against the powerful, is the continual belief in their victimization, Trump and Barr and their associates, a reason why they're resorting to the conspiracy theory?
That actually also explains the conspiracy theories, not just of Trump, but of earlier presidents and powerful figures like, you know, Richard Nixon or J. Edgar Hoover. Lyndon Johnson, we know this from audio tapes, believed that the anti-war movement was a communist conspiracy. And even beyond that, he believed that the North Vietnamese were the puppets of China, which was like totally at odds with reality. But I'd say even beyond that, I think that what we're seeing is the birth of a lost cause myth among Trumpists, that if Trump does go down, either impeachment and removal or more likely defeated in the election next year, there will be this myth, just as there's a myth about how the South had a noble cause and was lost. There will be this myth that Trump was going to be a great president, make America great again, and he was betrayed by the deep state. And this is what will keep Trumpism alive even after he's gone.
There was a piece in New York Magazine by Ed Kilgore this week musing on the word coup.
This is not an impeachment. This is a coup d'etat.
This is nothing less than an attempted coup d'etat and end run around the ballot box.
Here is our president from just tonight. And we quote, "As I learn more and more each day, I'm coming to the conclusion that what is taking place is not an impeachment. It is a coup intended to take away the power of the people."
Nixon and Clinton's allies also said the impeachment proceedings were coups against them. And Kilgore wrote, "One very common element of coup treatments of impeachment is the idea that presidents should only be accountable to the electorate, which makes his or her removal by Congress an effort to, quote, reverse election results or usurp democracy." In this formulation, any impeachment effort is a conspiracy, any effort of the Congress to enforce its function as a third branch of government.
Yeah, no, that's a very interesting point. I mean, even though impeachment is in the Constitution and it is absolutely the right of Congress, if you really believe that the president has an absolute legitimacy and, as Nixon said, if the president does it, it's not illegal, then yeah, impeachment is a coup. It goes to show that the conspiracy theory comes from a position of power, of people who have power and don't like to see it challenged, and therefore can only see any challenge to power as coming from dark, mysterious, and sometimes outside forces.
But not just people in power. I mean, people who believe the moon landing was faked or...
No. I mean, I think that there's a conspiracy theories of the weak and the conspiracy theories of the strong. And there's definitely long history in America of weak and marginalized people using conspiracy theories to critique the status quo. I guess the original or novel point I want to make is that the strong also have their conspiracy theories.
Right. And so does your observation that Trump is likely getting high off his own supply, that he seems to believe the crazy stuff he's saying. Does it change the way we understand him?
I think Trump believes what he's saying in a very precise sense that he cannot see any challenge to himself as legitimate. His ability to believe that is strengthened by the fact that he is a BSer more than he's a liar. The further ramification of this is that it'll make it much harder to get him to leave. Like, I think Nixon was a liar. And I think Nixon knew to some degree, you know, what he had done and what he had lied about. And therefore, he knew the jig was up. I think emotionally, it's very hard for Trump to know that. So I would be very surprised if Trump leaves or, more importantly, if he ever gives up any of these conspiracy theories. They're too valuable to him and they're too much a part of who he is.
You noted that when Scarface doesn't obey lesson number two of drug dealing, don't get high on your own supply. Well, you know.
Go! I think that it's actually better to be a liar than to be a BSer for that reason, that if you get high on your own supply, if you believe your own lies, it's harder to pull back. It's harder to be held in check by people around you. It's harder to regain grounding in reality. So I don't see any of this going anyplace nice.
Well, thanks a lot, Jeet.
Sorry to be a downer.
Jeet here is national affairs correspondent for The Nation. This week he wrote, Trump is high on his own supply.
This is On the Media.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.